British Prime Minister Theresa May's pledged £4 billion in support of African economies in terms of job creation. This as Brexit edges closer and the UK leader seeks to solidify trade relations for Brexit Britain, where her global vision for Brexit Britain involves the African continent being its key trade partner. May has also expressed support of land expropriation without compensation in South Africa, if done legally. And South Africa aside, she plans on visiting Nigeria and Kenya in her efforts to reinforce those global ambitions. So, what could May's Brexit Britain have to offer the country and continent at large? George Glenos, who's MD and head of research at ETM Analytics, joins us on the line with his analysis. Thanks so much, George, for joining us this evening. So, broadly, right at the top, what have you made of the support coming through from Theresa May with regards to the land expropriation policy, with a few important caveats, of course?
Yeah, thanks, Alicia. Good evening to everyone. It was generally good news, but I think it's something to be expected from Britain going forward. Of course, now that they're going to be exiting the European Union, they're going to have to renegotiate many of their trade treaties around the world. So the fact that they're renegotiating with South Africa, amongst a few others, I think is to be expected. From what I gather, given the press briefings that were released, they're carrying forward pretty much the same deal that they had with that South Africa enjoyed with the EU. So not too much changes there. And ultimately, if one has a look at the trade numbers between South Africa and the UK, we enjoy a trade surplus something in the order of about anywhere between 5 and 10 billion rand a year. So the trade deal as it stands right now is mildly in our favour, if you like, which is good news. So the fact that it gets extended is something I would put positive. It brings a little bit of stability on that front. But in terms of Britain, I suspect that we're going to see her renegotiating and going to visit many countries to get her Brexit trade deals done.
What does becoming the largest G7 investor in Africa actually buy Britain?
Well, I think it's a fairly bold statement. Let's see if she even makes that much of a term, given the fluidity of UK politics. But that's a fairly bold term, a fairly bold statement, and it would require a lot more than just the £4 billion. But in essence, I think what she would be referring to there is encouraging the private sector to get stuck into Africa by virtue of the fact that it's a relatively untapped continent by comparison to many of the more developed economies, and that there is indeed some returns to be made there if people are prepared to get stuck in and do the hard yards that usually associated with startup businesses in Africa.
And that's the very big question, George, if they're prepared to get stuck in. On the questions on whether the land policy would hurt efforts to attract foreign investment into the country, we've had the Prime Minister say that if legal and transparent, South Africa and Africa offers significant opportunity for investors. Do you think that's just a wishful thinking on her part?
No, I'm not so sure that it is. Look, undoubtedly, this issue of land reform has been brought to the fore, and it now needs to be tackled. Whether one likes it or not, it needs to be tackled. And the reality of the situation is that it's been ignored for far too long. And so it has become a burning issue. It's become the key central point ahead of the 2019 elections. And so we're going to hear a lot more about this. What one hopes is that it gets done in a responsible manner. Now, I've got to tell you that in principle, I have no problem at all if we are talking about the privatization of state-owned state-owned enterprise land, municipal land, and government-owned land that's not being utilized properly. If we're talking about the privatization of that, which comes along with the handing out of title deeds, and truly empowering communities, then I'm all for that. I think that's fantastic. If we're talking about expropriation without compensation being a means to facilitate and to expedite the process of privatizing some of that land, again, I would be quite supportive of that. What they've got to tread very, very carefully on is the issue of property rights. Now, they talk about the strengthening of property rights, but they don't tell us how exactly they plan to do so. So these are the issues that we need to tackle. Quite clearly, you could see just from today's reaction in the Rand, when the announcement that they were pulling back on the Section 25 amendment in Parliament, and the Rand's response to that, just how significant this is in terms of driving sentiment. Both,
in fact, moving all the way to 1390, right?
Precisely. I mean, you're talking about a 25 to 30 cent move in a matter of minutes, and that was purely on the back of news that Section 25 would not be amended. So government has a lot of work to do, and if it's one major criticism I have of them right now, it's that their communication has been utterly awful. It's been terrible. If they had communicated so many of these things in a more constructive way, perhaps we wouldn't have the level of uncertainty that we do. And still now, I'm not sure that we get a coordinated communication strategy from government. And I wish they'd put things down on paper and clarify things as clearly as they possibly can. Mr. Ramaphosa went some way to doing that by penning that article in the Financial Times. But, you know, one begs the question, why can't we do that locally? Why do we need to do it in the Financial Times?
Absolutely. Yeah, well, as you say, it's the lack of that clarity that works to, dent investor sentiment. Looking even broader than investments, we've had the ministers say that the UK's development aid would look at how we can assist in bringing stability to those states are fragile. And there's some skepticism around that. I mean, how does the UK realistically achieve something like that, George?
Well, it's more to do with carrots rather than sticks in terms of encouraging prudent policy and discouraging policy that's not as prudent. So you would imagine that any funding is utilized almost as a reward, if you like, for policies that are deemed to be constructive and that bring stability to the economies that they're deployed in. So there's merit in that, just in the same way as sanctions can hurt an economy if they're imposed. Having incentives such as this can also encourage economies to behave appropriately.
George, just to end off, looking at all of this, how much of what we've discussed right now, in fact, hinges on how Brexit plays out?
So I don't know that too much of it hinges on that. I think Brexit's going to happen. The question around Brexit is whether it's going to be a no-deal Brexit, in which case the UK really is going to be renegotiating things from scratch, especially with the EU, or if it's going to go in with an EU-friendly type of Brexit deal. It's looking increasingly likely like there will be no deal, in which case, you know, what Theresa May has been doing now is, I think, a prudent start to renegotiating trade deals and making sure that there is a backup plan to what happens in the event that a no-deal Brexit materializes. But Brexit's going to happen,
yeah.
And the UK is going to have to renegotiate. And if this is part and parcel of that process, well, then I suspect we're going to see a lot more of it.
Yep. Well, let's leave it there. George, thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. And, of course, George Glinas, who's MD and Head of Research at ETM Analytics.